Jagna Podcast.
Greetings and welcome back to the Jagna Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Jones. And on today's episode, we continue on this journey through the audiobook Level Elite. I hope you've been enjoying the audiobook thus far. If this is your first time tuning into the Jagna Podcast, be sure to check out the previous three episodes where we dove into the beginning of the audiobook. Also, if this is your first time listening, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And for everybody, please go to Jagna Institute on YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel, because I am about to transition the content over to YouTube. It's going to live and start on YouTube and transition to the actual podcast. So I'm going to start doing some live programs. I'm going to open it up, do a couple Google Hangouts. I'll be posting videos throughout the week there in a more shorter content form. So if you want more content from me, some more constructive content that's not just on personal development, but also identifying things that happen, you know, in our life, you know, throughout the weeks, and how that ties into how you need to get your mind right to move forward and to build your capacity, be sure to head over to the YouTube Jagna Institute page. You can find all that information at jagnainstitute.com. But yeah, we rolling. We about to start pushing out a whole bunch of content. You know, we're wrapping up 2017. I'm trying to get ready for a big 2018 launch and actually release a physical book. That's right, a physical book. Actually, a couple. I've been working on some things. I've been piecing stuff together. So the podcast is growing. I've been featured on a couple people's platforms. Shout out to Thought Crimes, Prince Solo, and Sincere over there. They've been a big support to me. Shout out to BGS Ibmore on YouTube. Those are both channels on YouTube that you can find very constructive content from. So be sure to check them out. All right, let's get into the audiobook. You know what I'm saying? So, as always, be safe, be constructive, and be elite. And this is chapter 3 on developing a code. So tune in, and I'll holler at y'all again next week. Peace.
Chapter 3, Living by a Code. A code. We all need to have a personal code and a cultural code that we live by. Unfortunately, if you're black and in the United States, and if you have slavery in your history, or if you've been here or your family's been here for several generations, we've lost our cultural code for various different reasons that I shall not go into at the very moment. But we don't have a cultural code, a code of ethics, a code of boundaries, a code of getting things done. We just don't. We all operate on various levels of individualism and dysfunction, and that's due to the trauma that we have experienced, the intergenerational trauma that we have experienced has dismantled that. And I have more information on intergenerational trauma on my website and on my YouTube page. Contact me if you would like more information about that, and we can discuss it. But for now, the ABCs of life. The ABCs of life will help us develop a code. It will help us develop a code, a procedures for us to live elite level of life. And those ABCs are: A, adaptive awareness; B, boundaries and balance; and C, consistent constructive choices. So the next area is what I call the ABCs of resiliency. One of the things that is a continuous reminder for black people is that we are under a consistent state of trauma, a consistent state of threat, a consistent state of poverty, as a collective group in a consistent state of not having a collective power. And since we are in this position, oftentimes we are left to kind of fight for our rights, go up against a system, and we are often left hopeless. But one of the things that I often hear, and I'm using often a lot, but one of the things that I hear a lot is that we're resilient people, which is true. We've been through so much, especially here in the United States and across the world, but especially here in the United States, we've been through so much, but we continue to be joyful. We continue to accept other people. We continue to move forward, even though we're not anywhere close to where we should be as a collective. And one of the reasons why we do that is just within our spirit, within our culture, we are resilient. Resiliency is a key piece to who we are as a people. Now, we need to break down resiliency a little bit. And what I say is we need to have resiliency just isn't about overcoming struggle. It's really about investment. And that's investing both in yourself as an individual and a social investment as a collective. Now, for the purpose of this audiobook, I'm going to focus more on what you can do to invest in what I call the ABCs to resiliency or of resiliency. Now, A stands for adaptive awareness. B stands for balance and boundaries. And C stands for consistent constructive choices. So let's start with A. A, adaptive awareness. Adaptive awareness is one, being aware. Currently, we have a lot of people saying stay woke, be woke. But awareness is a key, right? Awareness is also a skill, something that you have to develop. But the key to awareness is being honest. You know, a lot of people want to bury their head in the sand, not pay attention to what's going on. And being honest is the key to awareness. You cannot, you know, be a black person in America, not be aware of how racism, white supremacy is affecting your life. You just can't do it. I mean, there's a lot of people who attempt to act like there's no issue. But when you keep seeing police murdering people, we keep seeing people in poverty, we keep seeing statistics of black folks who are struggling economically, educationally, health-wise, in housing, homelessness, all these things. How can you not realize the condition that you and your people are in? It's very difficult. So a lot of people think that other folks, non-black folks, are ignorant of, you know, the conditions of black people or racism or white supremacy. When I say, I don't know if they're necessarily ignorant about it, I think that we're ignorant about it. We don't understand how these things work. We're aware of them, but we don't understand how they work, and we don't adapt to our understandings of how they work. And it takes honesty to be adaptive. So A is for adaptive awareness, and that's just, you know, understanding the context in which you live in, the situation that you're in, and making adjustments, adapting to it, making constructive adjustments, not burying your head in the sand, not giving up on yourself or on the collective group, but just being aware and saying, okay, this is not right. I don't like the situation that I'm in. I need to do something different. At the beginning of the audiobook, I talked a little bit about my history. And me, you know, growing up in a home full of domestic violence and me feeling like things weren't right for me and leaving home when I was 12. At the age of 12, I was able to be honest with myself and say, hey, this is not a good situation for me. I need to do something different. And I was fortunate enough to have the flexibility to go live with my grandmother, which was a huge help. It was a huge help for me to get out of that environment that was not helpful into another environment so I can continue to move forward in life. Now, a lot of people are not in a position like I was in to leave their family or their close friends or whatever the case may be. So things can be a lot harder. But if you can shift your environment, if you're honest about the context in which you live in, it will put you in position for you to strive and move forward. And this is something that a lot of people have to do in order to reach that elite level of life. The next area of the ABCs of resiliency is B, And B stands for balance and boundaries. We need balance. Balance is something that doesn't get talked about a lot, especially when it comes to self-help. You know, people talk about passion. People talk about, you know, overcoming your failures and you need to fail to succeed. But people don't talk about balance. Like, we need balance. We need to have a little bit of things that are constructive, a little bit of things that are non-constructive, things that are 100% productive and things that are a little bit not, you know, non-productive. I think that there needs to be a healthy balance. I think that people who go 100% hard on, you know, fighting the system and they don't take time to relax and to get into a little bit of escapism, unfortunately, those people, they burn themselves out. They burn themselves out. And this can be dangerous. So I do think that there needs to be a healthy balance in everything that we do. And along with the healthy balance needs to come boundaries so that you're not overdoing what's going on. You know, there's no perfect balance. I think that everyone's balance is different. However, I do not believe that it's good for you to be extremely on one end of the spectrum versus the other. And here are a few things that I believe is important for us to be balanced in as far as for us to reach an elite level in our lives. The first continuum is the I and the we. I believe that it's important for us to have a good balance in how we feel about ourselves and be a little bit selfish versus, or not, yeah, I guess versus the we. You know, how do we see things as the collective? You know, am I doing all this stuff just for me? Am I doing some of this for my people? Am I doing this for some of this for my family or for my friends or the groups that I'm a part of? You need to have a balance, but having a little bit of selfishness is healthy, and having a little bit of, I guess compassion or connection with other people is healthy as well. And we all need that. We need to have a good balance in the I and the we. The next area is time and energy. I talked a lot about this in the previous chapter, but it's just going to reiterate it. But we need to have balance in our time and our energy. We shouldn't be putting all our energy into one particular activity. We shouldn't be putting all our time into one particular activity. We have to divide it up as constructive as we can so that we're getting things done in a good order. If you're investing all your time into one thing, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position. Same thing. If you're putting all your energy into one thing, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position. And this happens a lot to people. We get stuck in our daily grooves. We get stuck in our daily routines and habits, and we don't get a lot of things accomplished because we're just running on a pattern that's off balance. The next area is compassion and accountability. Huge. I have a term, a concept called compassionate accountability that I talk about when I do trainings with organizations and agencies that work with our people. Because a lot of times I work with agencies that have 100% accountability. These agencies could be like juvenile correction centers, you know, anything that's working with people that are, you know, have some type of record. So they're involved in law. Those folks are usually 100% accountable. And then I work with agencies that have a whole bunch of compassion. These are more like people that work with mothers and people that work with families and children. And they're just so compassionate. And I think that both, a lot of times what I end up seeing when I'm doing my consulting is both organizations aren't really doing their clients a good service because of how they're operating. If they're being 100% compassionate and they're letting things slide and they're giving people extra bus passes and they're letting people miss meetings and groups and things like that. And they're just trying to help as much as they can. They're enabling those people. They're enabling them. They're not helping them, you know, move forward. They're not letting them understand, like, look, there's still rules. There's still, you know, expectations that you need to accomplish. Even though you are in a difficult position and you are coming to this agency for help, you still have to get things done. And then when we are extremely compassionate and just letting things slide, we're really enabling people, and that's not healthy. And then on the other end, accountability. There were a lot of folks, you know, if someone misses a group, they're not getting anything from me. I'm sending them back to jail for 36 months. And, you know, people violating their probation and all this stuff because all this 100% accountability and there's no wiggle room at all. And that's usually how we get caught in a lot of traps, too, is people just don't give us any benefit of the doubt. They don't even try to work with us, and they just, you know, lay the hammer down super hard, and they just don't have any compassion. They don't give a damn about what happened to us or anything. And I believe if you have a balance, if you have compassionate accountability, and you still hold people accountable, but you break it down to them why you're doing it, you listen to them, you understand their situation, that's how people learn. People learn from rules and regulations, but they also learn from being heard and being respected and having people actually give a damn about them. And I think this is important for you to develop is compassionate accountability. And this is not just for work. This is for, you know, in your life, people, your family members, people that you may date, your children. Compassionate accountability is huge because we're all going to go through things where we need some help, or we're all going to do something that we should not have done. And we need to be accountable for those things. And the biggest thing that we can do is hold ourselves accountable. The next area is we need to have balance in our emotions and our logic. I talked a little bit about this before also. Now, emotions and our logic. We need to have balance in our emotions. I meet a lot of people that are extremely emotional. I mean, they just can't control themselves. They can't handle it. They can't manage their emotions at all. And when you can't manage your emotions, you put yourself in, once again, vulnerability. I keep bringing up that term because it's very important that you don't want to be left out here vulnerable. You know, there's a time and a place to be vulnerable, but if you're always vulnerable, you probably get manipulated, and you probably have no control of your life, and you're probably not satisfied or happy. You're not succeeding because you're vulnerable. So managing your emotions is good, and having those emotions and letting those emotions process, but you got to have some management on them. And then the other end, logic. I would say 70% of people I know, they don't use logic on a consistent basis. Logic is all about cause and effect. You know, logic is about if I do A, B is going to happen, which might lead to C. Like, that's logic, and a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people base their judgments based off their emotions, and they don't apply logic to things. Very important to have a balance between both. Both serve a purpose. We need to have our emotions. Our emotions are a part of us, but we also have to be logical. We have to be analytical. We have to be strategic. We have to understand, okay, why do I feel the way I feel? You know, what can I do about this situation? That's all logic. So having a good balance between your emotions and your logic is very significant. The next area of the ABCs of resiliency is C. And C stands for consistent constructive choices. Again, consistent constructive choices. Constructive. Let's talk about that word. I don't use the word positive and negative. I don't use the terms or the words positive and negative very often. I have learned to substitute those words with constructive and non-constructive or destructive. And the reason why I do that is because positive and negative is really up to someone's interpretation, unfortunately. So something that I might feel is a positive thing to do, you might not agree with, right? So therefore, if I tell you to do something that's positive and the results are not constructive, you will just say, hey, this is what you told me to do. So if I tell a parent to discipline their child in a positive manner, and they believe a positive manner is beating the hell up with their child with a belt, you know, that I haven't, but the result was you bruised your child and now child protection has to be called. You know, that's not a good situation. However, that ends up happening. So I have substituted the word positive with constructive and the word negative with non-constructive or destructive. So consistent constructive choices about that. What can you do on a consistent basis that's constructive and that you're making the choice to do it? It's very important. A lot of times we do something constructive, we'll make a choice, and it works, and it will go back to our old behavior that doesn't work, and then we wonder why, because we don't have that consistency. We have to try to do the most accurate thing that we can do every time we do something, no matter on what you're doing. If that's going to the grocery store, you should do that the most accurate way. If that's communicating with your partner, you should do that in the most constructive way. You know, if that's eating dinner, you should do that in the most constructive way. Everything that we do needs to be constructive. All the choices that we make need to have a constructive result. You know, and you know, this is something that must be applied. All, you know, our choices must be three things. All our choices must be relative, they must be relevant, and they must relate to something constructive. And if they don't, if they're not relative to something constructive, if they don't relate to something constructive, and if they're not relevant to something constructive, it might not be the best choice for you, and you might need to reanalyze it. You know, in therapy, we have a decision-making technique that we use. I've also seen this used with life coaching as well. And it's kind of corny, but I think it's something for us to remember as we go through our day-to-day and through our life. And that decision-making technique is called STOP. It's an acronym. So S-T-O-P, STOP. And STOP stands for stop, think, options, proceed. Very easy. Very easy decision-making technique to use, especially in those times where things are very frustrating. You don't know what to do. One of the best things that you can do for yourself is utilize the STOP technique, and that's just to stop, think, options, proceed. What are your options? How do you proceed with those? So there you have it. Those are the ABCs of resiliency. A, once again, was adaptive awareness, and the key to adaptive awareness is to be honest. B was for balance and boundaries. We need to have balance in everything that we do. We need to set boundaries up for ourselves so we are not being vulnerable, and that we are protecting our mental health, our emotional health, our spiritual health, and our physical well-being. And C, consistent constructive choices. Make sure the choices that you choose are relative, relevant, and they relate to something constructive. Mastering your intellectual process. This is a concept that I developed called mastering your intellectual process. This is pretty much equal to what many people may know as social and emotional intelligence. Social and emotional intelligence. Both of those terms and concepts have been very popular since the early 1990s. It's been associated with workplace, it's been associated with leadership, it's been associated with developing children, and it has been just associated with self-improvement in general. There are many different definitions for both emotional intelligence and social intelligence. I combine both terms and concepts together and call it mastering your intellectual process. How I define social and emotional intelligence, or your intellectual process, is being able to manage your thoughts, speech, actions, emotional response, and perceptions. And when we are able to do this as individuals, this helps us develop into what I like to call our genius. Because when we can do this, when we are able to access each level of social and emotional intelligence on a consistent basis, we tend to shine. We tend to shine as individuals. We tend to shine as partners. We tend to shine as family members and friends, and within whatever our various workplaces are. So mastering your emotional and social intelligence is very important. So there are four levels to social and emotional intelligence. Those levels are social awareness, relationship management, self-management, and self-awareness. Those are pretty much the four core levels. Another level that's added that I don't necessarily add with my definition is empathy, because I feel like empathy is built into all those and should not be separated as its own level. And you know, some folks may agree with that, some folks may not. However, empathy should be related and connected within all four of those levels and should not be its own level itself from my perspective. So let's start with the areas of awareness. First area of awareness that we will start with, self-awareness. Now, everyone talks about being aware, you know, being woke, paying attention to our environments. This is very important. A lot of folks are not self-aware. A lot of folks are not socially aware in their lives. And when you're not aware, when you're not focused, when you're not being honest with yourself, you're missing a lot of critical things that are going on around you and critical things that are going on within you. And when that happens, you are vulnerable to a lot of negative things potentially happening in your life. People taking advantage of you, being in toxic environments, unhelpful situations. And this can leave someone in a very unhappy and detrimental place to be. So, self-awareness. One of the key things of self-awareness that I have found in my personal life and with people that I work with is being able to slow down. One thing about the life that we live, especially within the United States, is we're always consistently moving from one task to another. It's like rats in a maze. Just keep going, keep going, keep going till you reach whatever destination that you're seeking, and then keep going from there. Every day we have different productivity tools. We have different task masters and task managers and these things that we just got to keep moving, and we don't really slow down and analyze what's going on with ourselves. This is why the area of mindfulness is very important. A lot of people focus on mindfulness and self-care is because as Westernized people, we are consistently pushed to keep moving forward. And when you don't slow down for yourself, it's hard for you to analyze what's really going on with you until something negative happens, like having a health scare or someone dying or you having a panic attack. Like when these types of things happen, it's usually because we're overworking ourselves. Our anxiety levels are sky high. We're extremely stressed out or burnt out, and we're not taking very good care of ourselves. So slowing down is a huge part of developing your self-awareness. The next part, understand your thoughts and feelings. This is something that I feel we struggle with, and I see this all the time with my clients. Understanding how you think, you, yourself, your thoughts, and how you feel about things. Oftentimes, we are conditioned to think and feel what other people want us to think and feel. And culturally, we accept other folks' agendas for our thoughts and feelings and not really thinking for ourselves. This is why things like pep rallies are very efficient, kind of like what we have going on currently. With presidential elections, like people put themselves in Republican boxes or Democratic boxes, and they go to conventions and they watch these things, and we are being conditioned how to think and how to feel, and we don't do too much of that thinking and feeling and understanding. Why do we have these thoughts? Why do we have these feelings? Who are they benefiting? Are they benefiting myself? Are they benefiting someone else? Is this the most healthy thought or feeling that I should have for myself? This is a key to being elite. This is a key to self-awareness, because when we cannot protect our thoughts and our feelings and understand where and why these thoughts and feelings are happening, we are also left to be in a vulnerable position, which we do not want to be. Another element of self-awareness is processing your emotions. So not only do we need to understand our thoughts and our feelings, but we actually have to process our emotions. You know, understand, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to have shame. It's okay to be happy. A lot of folks don't actually process through their emotions. One thing that we tend to do as human beings is cover up our emotions. We try to bury them as much as possible. Or we try not to validate them. Like, there are a lot of people that I meet that aren't necessarily proud to be happy. You know, or there's people that I meet that see other people that are happy and then they wonder, why the hell is that person so happy? Like, what is this person smiling for? And, you know, it's okay to process our emotions. It's okay for us to just accept why we're feeling the way that we feel about something and let those emotions go through us. When we choose to bottle up our anger, suppress our happiness, you know, I'll just lash out our anger on folks or whatever the case may be, these are not necessarily us processing through those emotions, allowing those emotions to do what they need to do, which means that we need to control ourselves a little bit better as well. But if we're suppressing how we feel and what we think about The things that are happening to us or around us, this is very unhealthy, not only for our mental and emotional health, but it also can be unhealthy for our physical health as well, because it can cause a lot of stress. And as we know, stress leads to a lot of physical illnesses. Social awareness. Social awareness is all about staying in control. Control of yourself. And understanding your surrounding. You know, one thing about social awareness that is very important for you to reach that level of elite is knowing your values and why those values are yours. A lot of people do not really know their own personal values. A lot of people, they value things that they were passed down from one generation to the next. But they might not necessarily believe those things, but they just hold them to themselves just in case anyone questions their values. And this can be very dangerous. I believe that it's important for you to set some of your own personal values and make sure that those match with what, where and what you're trying to do and where you're going. So knowing your values, when you know your values, it helps you to become more socially aware, because once you have your own set of values, you're able to see what does not correlate with where you're going and what you're doing as it pertains to other people. Because other people, they have their own agendas, they have their own values, they have their own habits, and a lot of times those might not match with yours. However, we just let those people rock on with us, or, you know, we just go with the flow, you know, just let things just kind of happen, let the chips fall where they may, and this is not always a good thing for us. So being socially aware, understanding your values, understanding why you have those values. Do those values match with where you're going? Are the folks around you, are their values matching with where you're going? This is social awareness. Another step or element of social awareness is holding yourself accountable. Very difficult. A lot of times we want to hold other people accountable. You know, this leader is not doing enough for us. We're going to hold these people accountable. And you know, it's funny when we always say that, but a lot of times no one ever gets held accountable. Those people just go on and they can just do whatever they want to do. But one of the biggest things that you can do is hold yourself accountable. Make sure that you're doing what you need to do. And when you're doing it, it's the best possible outcome for you, and you're not causing any harm to anyone else. If we did that, we might have a better opportunity to hold other people accountable, right? So if you're unhappy with some community leader because they're not speaking up about your issues, well, one way that you can hold them accountable is you don't support that person and you speak up about the issues. See, that's holding yourself accountable. You're taking an action step and you're being socially aware for what you need and what you're trying to get accomplished, and you're not waiting on someone else to do it. Now, that is accountability. That's when you take the step to get done what needs to be done. You make sure that what you're doing is consistent. And you make sure what you're doing is constructive. You make sure what you're doing is beneficial and it's working and it's not causing harm to other people. That is holding yourself accountable in all social situations. The next thing, practice being calm, right? Practice calming down. This kind of goes back with what I said previously about slowing down. But practice being calm. Being calm, you know. What are you looking at? What are you looking at? This is a question that I heard a lot growing up, and I often hear a lot when I'm around other men. You know, someone gives you a crazy look. What you looking at? It's like, whoa, just flipping out about other people. And a lot of people are on edge. A lot of people are trigger happy. You know, a lot of people are waiting for someone to try them. A lot of people are waiting for someone to step out of line or get out of place. And one of the reasons why a lot of people are on edge like that is because they don't know how to be calm. Their anxiety levels are so high. The levels of paranoia are so high. They're just waiting for someone to do something out of the ordinary so they can check them, put them in place, or set them straight. But that's not practicing being calm. See, if we were able to calm down, analyze, slow down, pay attention to what's happening, we can settle a lot of situations better. Because one thing that I've learned is people who are in power, they have patience. They're very patient people. They focus. They have either they do a lot of research themselves, or they have people that do a lot of research for them. And in order to do any research to understand something critically and analytically, you have to have patience, because things don't just happen out of nowhere. Like, everything takes patience. So if you're listening to this and you are like, yes, I definitely want to be elite, you need to practice being calm, because you have to be patient. You have to calm down. You have to analyze. You have to focus. And you have to pay attention to your surroundings. And that's those are the four elements of social awareness. So it's about being in control. It's about knowing your values and why you have those values. It's about holding yourself accountable. And it's about practicing being calm in social situations. The next area of mastering your intellectual process or social and emotional intelligence is self-management. One of the elements of self-management that I like to highlight is being proactive versus reactive. Now, a lot of times when you hear people talk about being proactive versus reactive, they make it seem like being reactive is a negative thing. Myself, not necessarily. I think that there needs to be a balance between both being proactive and reactive, because being reactive has a place. However, I find that a lot of people that I know they're either on one end of the spectrum or the other, and they don't have a balance between proactivity and reactivity. Example, reactivity. Currently in the United States, we have a lot of injustice towards Black people. I shouldn't even say currently. This has just been something that's been happening ever since we've been in this hemisphere. However, in more recent times, in the last 5 to 6 years, we've seen an uptick in police brutality or murders that have been video recorded. And one of the responses has been the social group Black Lives Matter. Now, a lot of people believe that Black Lives Matter is just a reactive group. You know, they just go out here and they block highways and they chain themselves to buildings and they're shouting, yelling up and down the street. They're doing all these things. They're just being reactive. Now, there may be some truth into that, and this is not necessarily the medium to talk about that. However, they may be seen as a group that's extremely reactive. Protest. A lot of people think that protest or uprisings are reactivity, which they are, and those serve a purpose. And then on the other end of that spectrum, we have proactive, right, or proactivity. And this is like people who are preppers, doomsday preppers. These are people who are, go get your gun, stock up on your ammo, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but they have, you know, they have garages full of food just waiting for Armageddon to happen, waiting for martial law to take place. And these people are being extremely proactive and they're just ready for anything to pop off, but nothing has happened just yet. So those are two extremes to waiting for anarchy to just kind of happen at any moment, is being a little over proactive or a little over reactive. I think that in order to have self-management, we need to have a balance of both. And this can apply to, it doesn't have to be, you know, you being murdered by the police or you waiting for the government to take over the world, or not take over the world, but, you know, come and issue martial law. This could be small things like going to work. Going to work could be a stressful thing for a lot of people. And I think that people can be more proactive to going to work. You know, there's that coworker that you can't stand. This person gets on your nerves. They always got something slick to say to you. And they're going to be there on Monday when you get in. Be proactive. Have a plan before you even get to work to deal with this person. You know, that's being proactive. Instead of reactive, telling, you know, that coworker to shut the hell up and get out of your face and leave me alone. Like, that's a reactive situation that won't help you. However, that person may do something different, say something crazy. There's something you don't want to hear when you step into your place of employment, and you have to have a reaction. But if you prep for it ahead of time, your reaction may be less damaging than if you don't prep. And that's kind of a small example of being proactive versus being reactive. It's very important for us to have a healthy balance of both. Being proactive is good. You always want to be prepared. But however, there are things that happen that you did not prepare for, where being reactive can be beneficial as well. The next area of self-management: examine your mistakes and examine your successes. Now, I personally do a lot of self-development stuff, and we talk a lot about failure, talk a lot about, you know, going through adversity, and they really don't give you big time failures or adversity. It's always some soft stuff like, you know, my company lost $300,000 in the first 6 months, but we persevered and we sold over 2 million shares of such and such. It's like, wow, that's some pretty adverse stuff. Well, I grew up in poverty. You know, sometimes I didn't know where my next meal was going to come from. I think that adversity is a little bit more drastic than, you know, your company losing $100,000 in the first 6 months. But hey, you know, everybody's, you know, errors, everybody's failures and mistakes are a little bit different, and they all should be analyzed. They all should be analyzed. However, one thing that's not talked about enough is analyzing your success. Why did that work for you? You know, why did that happen? How did I overcome that? And understanding why, if that, how that worked and why that worked, how can I apply that again so it keeps working for me? Because obviously, I did something right, or that situation was right for me for some reason. And it's good for us not to only analyze our mistakes, but also analyzing our successes, because our successes give us a window to what works for us instead of focusing on what didn't. The next area of self-management: having a personal code. Having a personal code. Now, a personal code, or what some folks may call code of ethics, right? The way that I view a personal code is it's really self-discipline. It's a constructive way of getting things done in any situation. This goes back to the proactive reactive part, because if you're being proactive and you're setting up a personal code to get things done in the most constructive way possible, in any and every situation, then you're putting yourself in a very positive and very powerful position. A lot of folks don't do that. A lot of folks don't sit down and think about, okay, how do I handle X situation? How do I handle this situation? How would I do that, right? How do you analyze? And that's self-management, getting things done. That's discipline. Discipline isn't about beating your kids so that they listen to you or setting someone straight. Discipline is about how do you handle a situation when you are the only one there, right? One example of a personal code or self-discipline that I find very interesting is, think about if you've ever driven to a grocery store or you were just a passenger in a car. And have you ever tried to park in a parking spot and there was a cart in the parking spot and you're just like, damn it, are you kidding me? Like, somebody left their cart in the parking spot that you tried to park in. You didn't see it because there was other cars blocking, and you tried to, you know, turn in and boom, there's a cart right there. And now you got to pull out, try not to hit nobody. Now you're mad because some food and left the cart. That person did not have a personal code. That person did not have good self-discipline. That person did not give a damn about nobody but themselves and just trying to get out of there and left their cart right in your spot, right in your spot. Now, a person with a personal code, a person who has some self-discipline, will put the cart back. Yes, it's easy to just, you know, grab your groceries, leave your cart right there, and just roll out. But have enough discipline to put the cart back. You know, discipline is about what you do when no one's looking, because you just do these things, and it should be constructive. And that's a simple example, but it's something annoying that happens to people all the time, is someone always leaves their cart in your parking spot. Don't be that someone. Have better self-management. You can do it. So, self-management consists of being proactive versus reactive and having a healthy balance. Examining your mistakes and your successes. And having a personal code of discipline that is set up with constructive ways of getting things done in any situation. Relationship management or social skills. In the world that we live in, as human beings, we're social creatures. Unfortunately, we have to get along with people no matter if we want to or not. You know, we have this ideal of individualism. But if you think about it, you cannot be an individual if it's not related to a group or collective or some type of social situation. Even being an individual is a response to a social situation. So we all are affected by relationships. And that's why it's important for us to have relationship management. And here are a few things that I believe are very important for us when it comes to our relationship and relationship management, especially if you want to be the most elite person that you can be. One area is paying attention to language. Paying attention to language. And this is body language. This is tone. This is also code words. Yep, code words. Language. Why is language so important? Language is important because this is how we communicate. Like, if we don't communicate, we don't get things done. And people communicate with folks in various different forms. Language carries a culture. Language gets things done. Language maintains situations, relationships, networks, all that. This is what language does. Right? So someone's body language tells you a lot about them. They may tense up, you know, they may get a little too lax, relaxed around you, and, you know, they might get a little too flirty with you. They might touch you when you don't like to be touched. Like, people's body language tells you a lot about what happens in social situations. People's tones, you know, someone can say, "Hey, how you doing today?" Or someone can be like, "How you doing today?" Now, those two different tones have two different meanings, and I'm communicating with you in two different ways. And this is why tone is very important to understand. You need to understand people's tone. Sometimes people are being sarcastic. Sometimes people are being aggressive. Sometimes people are passive aggressive. Sometimes people are being negative or condescending. And their tone will let you know kind of where they stand and what's happening. And that's how you, that helps you, that gives you a cue and helps you maintain a relationship and understand that. That's a skill. A lot of people don't have that. That is a skill that you need, because if you're not paying attention to someone's language, like, you're missing the boat. Somebody can be communicating something to you. They might be disrespecting you, or they might be trying to help you, and you're not picking up on these cues of language, and now you're missing something. So it's very important for you to get a better understanding of how people communicate with you and how you communicate with other people. Another thing that we don't talk about enough are code words. Groups have code words, period. It doesn't matter what group. We're talking about ethnic groups, racial groups, political groups, clubs, sports teams, families, whatever. All groups have code words. And a lot of times those code words are used to exclude you and keep you out. Now, in whatever situation you're in, whatever social situation, whether it's at your job, whether it's in your neighborhood, in your friendship, in your friend groups, your friendships, your family, there's going to be code words that you need to be hip to, because code words pass along a lot of information. And if you don't understand code words, you're missing a lot. The military has its own code, and not just the military, but even various different areas of the military. So Navy SEALs have their own codes, code words. People in the Air Force, they have their own code words. People in the Army, you know, the National Guard, all these people have a separate language that is exclusive to them and their group. And you should too. And you should understand that no matter which group and what groups you're in, because that's what's going to make you a universal person. That's how you be elite. And that's how you not get misused and you don't get abused. And you are able to understand various different levels of language and communication, code words. Code words are used to abuse people. Code words are used to maintain a culture. Code words are used to get things done in a constructive manner as well, and you need to know code words. The next area of social skills / relationship management is develop critical management skills. The next area of relationship management is developing conflict management skills. Now, there's so many books written on this. If you type in conflict management skills in YouTube or Google, you're probably going to get a lot of different videos or articles that pop up to talk about conflict management skills. This is very important for us to understand why, back to what I said before, we are social beings and humans have conflict with each other. Hell, animals have conflict with each other. This is just a part of life, unfortunately. Some of the conflict is a lot more drastic than others. However, you have to understand how to manage conflict. A lot of conflict happens because of what I previously talked about, language. You know, you might not understand something, you might have not picked up on someone's tone or their body language, and that created a conflict, or they might misinterpret something that you did or said, and that creates conflict. And you have to be able to learn how to manage conflict. If you don't learn how to manage conflict, you're going to put yourself in vulnerable positions. Notice, I keep using the word vulnerable. In order to be elite, you cannot be vulnerable. Or if you are vulnerable, you should have enough discipline to protect yourself as much as you can. Now, there's just some instances where we can't protect ourselves and a conflict's going to happen and we're just, you know, we're just in a bad position. However, you have to try to develop as many conflict management skills as possible because you cannot avoid conflict. You know, no one can avoid conflict. It's just going to happen. And if you can develop better skills to manage it, you will be better off. The next area is have a healthy amount of empathy for others. That's right. We're talking about managing relationships and having social skills. You need to have a healthy, quote unquote, amount of empathy for others. Now, you do not have to empathize with everyone about everything. We cannot be, you know, someone to everyone. We just can't. We don't have enough energy, time, or desire to empathize with every and any cause. However, you should kind of understand what's going on with everyone and be a world, quote unquote, worldly person, right? You should have a universal understanding of what's happening and have a healthy amount of empathy for them. Put yourself in someone else's shoes and kind of get where they're coming from, because when you're able to do that, that's going to allow you to tap into various different networks, various different understandings of people, and just kind of get where they are. Even if these people are negative, bad, racist, sexist, you know, demonic people, whatever negative things that these people may actually have, develop a healthy amount of empathy. It doesn't have to be huge. Whatever a healthy, quote unquote, healthy amount is to you, develop that amount of empathy for them, just so you can put yourselves in their shoes and understand their perspective and their worldview. Because when you tap into someone else's worldview or understanding, it really helps you develop into who and how you are within the world, and it helps you manage your social relationships with other people. So a healthy, quote unquote, level of empathy is better than none at all. Which leads me to my next point in relationship management is understanding the art of networking. Networking is critical. Whether we're talking about careers, whether we're talking about living in neighborhoods, whether we're talking about accumulating power, whether we're talking about building economic infrastructures or empowering ourselves, you have to have a network. We cannot get things done on our own. We cannot get things done by ourselves, unfortunately. No one is a one-man army. We all live within systems. We all live within systems. And within those systems are institutions that produce culture. And in order to produce culture, you have to have a network. So this is very important for us to understanding the art of networking and also understand what networks we are in, what networks we are not in, and how do we infiltrate the ones that we're not in, and how do we improve the networks that we are in. If you are someone who's a one-man army or a one-woman army and you do not understand networking or how to develop networks or how to operate within a network, you're not going to be elite. You're going to struggle and things are not going to work out very well for you. There's a lot of resources out there on networking. Find them, use them, learn from them, build with them. These will help you become elite. So there you have it. This is mastering your intellectual process, your social and emotional intelligence. Those four areas were social awareness, self-awareness, self-management, and relationship management or social skills. It's very important. If you want to have success, be elite, be someone of substance, be a leader, be someone that's respected, build a legacy, you have to master your intellectual process. You have to master your emotional and social intelligence. So the next level of all this be elite business that I've been talking about in this audio book is unlocking your genius. It's my belief that everyone has a level of genius. However, everyone doesn't reach their potential for various different reasons. Therefore, their genius never gets to be shared with the world. And this is what you need to do. Once you've mastered your intellectual process, once you've applied a lot of these things that I've shared here in this audiobook, done a lot of your own self, you know, soul searching, your own research, understanding yourself, then it's time for you to unlock your genius. You have it. Have you unlocked it? Are you waiting for someone else to tell you what your genius is? That's another problem that a lot of folks have that I've noticed is they're waiting for other people to bless them with what their genius is instead of them unlocking it for themselves. Now, let me define what genius is to me, because a lot of people think that it's just this, you know, the spiritual concept of something just that is just great, and they believe that it's something that they don't even possess, because genius, like, oh, people don't even like to call themselves a genius. You know, that's a huge issue that a lot of people have, is they don't even want to call themselves geniuses. Well, you do have genius, and you will be a genius, and you are a genius. You just have to unlock it. So how do I define genius? My definition is genius: a state of intelligence that is a summation of your actions, talents, and skills. Let me repeat that. Genius is a state of intelligence that is a summation of your actions, talents, and skills. So let's break down these three levels that I just introduced of genius: your skills, your talents, and your actions. Let's start with actions. Actions is all about, you know, what you know, your know-how, you know, hands in the dirt, things that you do, you know, moving forward, actually applying and applicating movement, you know, being consistent is very important for actions. You know, doing things, we talked about this before, doing things that is the most constructive thing for you to do, and making sure that it's consistent, you know. Having consistent constructive choices and making sure that everything you do has some consistency with it. And then the next part of actions is getting started, you know, taking risk, you know, doing things like this, an audiobook. Like, a lot of people don't do this stuff. They don't take a risk. People don't start a podcast or YouTube channel. People don't go to new places. People don't try new foods. People don't attempt to speak new languages. People don't leave the country. Take a risk. You cannot be elite if you stay in your comfort zone. There's no growth in the comfort zone, and there's no comfort in the growth zone. You have to get out of your bubble, your box, your square, and do something different. It's very important. So your know-how, putting your hands in the dirt, what do you know how to do? How do you do it? That's important. Being consistent, making sure that your consistency is constructive, and also getting started, taking a risk, getting out of your comfort zone. Those are your actions. The next level is talents. I don't have any talents, Brandon. What do you mean? Everyone has talents. You just haven't discovered what yours are yet. Now, when I was younger, I wanted to play in the NBA. And I was, you know, I wasn't that great at basketball, but I love basketball. I love basketball. But when I stopped growing at 5'11", almost 6 feet tall, I knew that my dreams of being a hoop dream, my hoop dreams were over. So that wasn't a talent of mine. That just wasn't, I did not have the basketball talent. I also didn't have the physical gifts to get there either. But I had other talents. I had other things that I was good at. I was good at understanding people's behaviors. I was good at talking. I was good at networking and meeting new people. I was good at making money. Like, these were things that I was good at, but I didn't see those as my talent. My focus was just get to the NBA, bro. Get that check. You know, get drafted. That was my focus in the 7th and 8th grade, and quickly I just gave up on all that. And I was actually better at football than I was at basketball. But in my mind, I thought my talent was always basketball, but it wasn't. I had to get real with myself. But what are your talents, you know? What are your talents? And talents can be hard to figure out because, you know, most of us don't have a healthy understanding of ourselves. So it's very hard for us to understand what our talents are if we don't understand ourselves. And this goes back to the mastering your intellectual process, because once you can understand yourself, you can get real with yourself and understand kind of what are your talents. And that's what I had to do. And it's something that just doesn't happen overnight. Like, you are always learning about your environment. You're always learning about yourself. So there are things right now that I have no clue that I'm good at, but I will discover in the next year or the next 5 years of my life, because we just are so full of, as human beings, we're just so full of different things that we are capable of. We just haven't accessed any information on it yet, or we haven't had an experience that has allowed us to say, damn, I'm actually pretty good at this, right? Another part of talents that's very important is your unfair, quote unquote, fair advantage. We all have unfair advantages in life. One example I have of this for myself, which, you know, kind of frustrates me at times, but at the same time, I know it's an unfair advantage and I gotta utilize it, is being a black male psychotherapist. I have a saying that black male psychotherapists are like unicorns. We're hard as hell to find, but when you do, you better hold on, because we are so busy and we're always moving. And that's an unfair advantage I have, because in my field, the typical therapist is a white female. So we know that people of all ethnic groups, ages, and et cetera, have issues and need some type of mental or emotional assistance. So I have an unfair advantage being a black male, because I know a lot of folks want black male therapists. That's my quote unquote unfair advantage that I can utilize to help me. Going back to my last story of me wanting to play in the NBA, I didn't have an unfair advantage. I was too damn short. Now, if I was 6'10", that would have been an unfair advantage, but I would have to get my skills up too. That's a whole nother thing that I'm going to talk about here in a moment. But if I was 6'10", that would have helped me get probably closer to my dream than it was, but I didn't have an unfair advantage there. But in this arena of mental health, I have an unfair advantage. And that's, you know, my ethnicity and my gender that is helping me advance at what I'm trying to do. So what is your unfair advantage in what you do? And is what you do, is that what you really want to do? Or is that something that you've been kind of cultivated in doing? You've been kind of driven in that direction to do it. So understanding your unfair advantage, there's nothing wrong with that. Utilize your leverage and make sure that it works for you. Which leads me to my next point, you know. Where do you shine more than most people? You know, what do you do that's just so damn good that a lot of people look at you and like, man, I don't know how you do it. Or, wow, you really can handle that really good. Where do you shine the most? Understand, where do you shine the most? And maybe that will lead you to another level. Where do you shine the most? This goes back to taking risks. See, if you don't take enough risks, you might not understand where you shine the most. Utilize your shine. It's okay to shine. It's okay. Where do you shine the most? And if you're not shining, if you do not shine anywhere, that's a clue for you to refigure your life and understand, okay, I got to make some changes because I'm not shining. Everybody should have somewhere where they shine. And if that's where you are and you don't have somewhere where you shine, it's time for you to make some changes within your life. And the next area of genius is skills. You gotta be skilled, right? You gotta have some skills. Can't just be out here doing everything willy-nilly. Can't do that. You can't get anything done without some skills. Skills takes, like I said earlier, being calm. Skills takes discipline. Skills take being patient, because you have to develop these things, right? So skills consist of hard work. We always hear that. Work hard, you can get things done. And, you know, and that's partially true. There's other things that go along with it. I mean, just working hard doesn't mean that you're just going to make things happen all the time. But you do have to have a hard work ethic, which really just means being disciplined and sticking with things. So having a healthy amount of discipline to get things done is a skill. Having tactics, very important. Not a lot of people talk about tactics. Strategy is important. If you want to be elite in whatever you do, whether that's being a parent, a teacher, a dentist, a psychotherapist, a lawyer, a judge, a police officer, if you want to be a police officer, a family member, you got to have some strategy, because you're working with other people. You're working with other people, and you have to have some tactics. How am I going to get things done? You know, what's my best move? What's my next move? Those are tactics that you should have. Another skill, and this helps with the tactics, and this is critical: understanding context. Understanding the context of situations and what's happening. If you don't understand the context which you're operating in, you're already at a loss, and it's going to be very hard for you to do anything, because you're going to be confused. Understanding the context of what you are dealing with and where you are at is very important. With that, having access. Access is a skill. And why is this a skill? Because when you have access to things, you're being exposed to situations that require your abilities. Your exposure is very important, and you have to develop that skill. This is getting out of your comfort zone, gaining access to things that you might not have been able to gain access to previously, or you might not have known about, or you might have been scared to deal with. But gaining access takes a skill. It requires you to be in situations, in places, in contexts that require your abilities. This is how you become elite, because you're putting yourself in positions that necessarily weren't there for you, or shouldn't have been there for you, or you didn't know were there for you. But you gained access and exposure to those things, and now you're there and people can't stop you. Which gets into the last skill, and I talked a little bit about this before. Networks, 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 networks. You gotta network. Having exposure to people whom can benefit from your abilities. Having exposure to people whom can benefit from your abilities. You have to be in networks to get things done. Without networks, we're not going to be able to solve any of our problems. We're not going to be able to be elite. We're not going to be able to have success, because you have to have networks. You have to operate networks. You have to lead networks. You have to build networks. Networks, networks, networks are very important, because it's a system. We live in systems. So those are the three elements of your genius: your skills, your talents, and your actions all equal your genius. You have to build those. You will be elite if you're working on those. I hope that has helped you.